Hey, this is Adam Sorensen, politics producer at Time.com. Welcome back to The Call, a weekly conversation with Time's political reporters on what they've been working on and the latest from Washington. Joining me this week are Michael Grunwald and Alex Altman.
So let's start off talking about financial reform. The battle's really kind of heated up in the Senate in the last week or so. And Majority Leader Reid said he hopes to bring the Dodd bill to the floor next week. Michael, you've been fairly skeptical about the chances of passage. Where does the bill stand now, and what are the major obstacles in its way?
There's a lot of talk in Washington right now that there's going to be a bipartisan solution. That is possible. It doesn't strike me as very likely, though. You know, this is something that Obama really wants, so I think you have to – the default is going to be that that the Republicans really don't want it. And while I sort of did lay out this one kind of path to yes, there are like hundreds of different paths to, oh, well, maybe next year. This is really complicated. There's even reasonable people can kind of disagree about how to do this properly. Even within the Obama administration, there's a lot of disagreement. And I just think the idea that they're going to super quickly get something through the Senate, then reconcile it with the House and get it back through the Senate and the House again in time to, you know, with this time limit where everybody's going to go home to campaign and beat the living crap out of each other, it just doesn't seem all that likely to me. But what do I know? I live in South Beach.
What are the main policy problems that Republicans have, or is it simply a political issue for them?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, the ones that have come up a lot, the first one that you heard a lot about was the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. In the recent days, you started to see some suggestions that Republicans might cave on that. Then you started to hear about derivatives regulation, which is a little more obscure and confusing, and banks are really afraid of it. What I think is so interesting is if you look at this bill, there are dozens of potential sticking points. And if you, you know, things that, you know, like resolution authority and systemic risk regulation and proprietary trading and federal preemption and all these really obscure things that are not going to make very good 30-second ads. Rather than getting into the substance of it, the politics of it is that if you want to find a reason to oppose this bill, it is not going to be difficult. And what I don't see is I see a lot of politicians who have an interest in wanting to appear to be in favor of financial reform, whether there are 60 people in the Senate who are desperate to actually pass financial reform, I don't think that's as clear.
Now, that raises an interesting point, because I've heard a lot about the White House trying to pick off one or two Republican senators. There's been some talk of Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, Scott Brown. But is the Democratic support for the bill really monolithic?
It is not monolithic. There are, you know, there are Democrats who supported this who are very comfortable with it, and there are Democrats who are not so comfortable with it. You know, Tim Johnson, who's going to be the next chairman of the Finance Committee, is from South Dakota, where Citi is headquartered for kind of nefarious reasons. You know, on the other side, you have folks like Ted Kaufman from Delaware, who doesn't think this is tough enough. So it's definitely not monolithic. And then when it comes to picking off one vote or two, you know, we sort of saw that movie during healthcare. And it makes things very difficult, because if you're going to make Olympia Snowe or Susan Collins the sort of arbiter of she's the one vote of who gets to decide what's in this, then you start getting into the kind of, you know, and then you need to nail down all 59 Democrats. You start, yeah, what any complaint they have has to be met, and you start getting the Cornhusker kickbacks that made healthcare so unpopular for a while. They said certainly months ago this was not the way they wanted to go. They've so far have stuck to that. That this is like, if they're not going to have Republican support, fine, we're going to put out a Democratic bill and sort of dare the Republicans to say no. I think strategically that and tactically that makes a lot of sense. It's sort of the only path I see. That said, it's still a very difficult path, and I'm just, you know, at this point they've made so many strong statements that even on the Democratic side, it's making any kind of compromise very difficult.
Mm-hmm. shifting gears here, Alex, you were at Tea Party rallies in Boston and D.C. this week. What were the general impressions you came away with of the movement and its members? There was an interesting New York Times, CBS News poll this week about kind of the makeup of the Tea Party. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the impression I came away is that it's very difficult sort of to boil this far-flung and diffuse group of people down to sort of a bumper sticker or a thesis that sort of summarizes what it is that's riling them up, what's motivating them, bringing them in many cases to travel across the country to hoist a couple of signs and listen to some of these protest songs. The New York Times poll was very interesting in certain regards. It sort of painted a picture of this group as sort of wealthier and better educated than a lot of even New York Times articles had theorized before. I mean, they had been sort of exploring, probing stories that dealt with whether or not sort of, soaring unemployment and a cratering economy had given these people, because they had lost their jobs, more time to work and volunteer.
Well, and Alex, I'm just curious what you thought reading the New York Times poll. But one thing that struck me was, right, that like looking at who these people are, it's like, you kind of look at it and it's like, I got it.
Right.
They're Republicans.
Right.
They don't like, they don't like the president. They were pissed off in 1993, too.
Right.
You can tell them that their taxes are lower than they've ever been, but they don't care. They don't like liberals. They're going to scream and yell.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And, I think the most striking, to me, the most striking facet of that poll was the fact that 52% of the Tea Party backers surveyed said that the amount of income tax they're going to pay this year was fair. So, you have this massive groundswell of discontent, and there are so many different things driving it. And I think, I've spoken to people who said, we can never get everyone within this, this big tent to agree on anything, if we're really holding these ideological purity tests out. One of the early sort of strains of sort of political punditry on these people was, yes, of course, they're Republicans, but are they going to be so extreme that, they're going to be sort of tempted to vote for their own candidates, run their own people as opposed to backing, mainstream people, such as, you bring out sort of a more moderate Republican, like Corker. I mean, someone who's willing to work with Democrats on financial reform, is that going to be someone whose positions are anathema to these people? And, I think ultimately when it comes down to it, the answer is no. I think that, you see that in Scott Brown. I mean, he remains a hero of theirs, even though he was, the first person to jump ship and go bipartisan on the stripped-down jobs bill.
Thank you both very much.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Adam.
For more political news and analysis, head over to time.com/politics. Once again, I'm Adam Sorensen, and this is The Call. Tune in next week.